The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We're very excited to have this guest. He's one of our favorite guests. He's actually one of our favorite people. When we went to the Money Show last year in Vegas, we were actually fortunate enough to have dinner with the gentleman.
Lots of fun.
And he is fun. And he is Managing Director, U.S. Equity Strategy of S&P Capital's Global Markets Intelligent Group. Sam Stovall serves as analyst, publisher. You know, the man does everything. He's also chairman of the S&P Investment Policy Committee. We are very pleased this morning to have with us again, Mr. Sam Stovall. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Mike. And with your cold, I won't get too close to the microphone.
Yeah. I'm so sorry, Sam. I'm really fighting it really, really hard. And summer colds are the worst. So I do apologize. Anyway, I don't even know where to start with you. I've got so many, but there was an article that Peggy brought to my attention this morning by Mr. Rosenberg, which he apparently did recently with you, in which he talked to you about the sell in May go away. And I always talk on the show about all those little adages that are out there, and I always warn people that they don't always work, and certainly sell in May and go away hasn't worked the last couple of years, but you have a completely new twist on it that you don't ever have to sell away and go in May. It looks like you just rotate into something else. Can you explain that to the folks?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I'm one of your typical investors. If left my own devices, my emotions could end up ruling when I buy and when I sell. So my thought was, if I could gravitate toward a rules-based investment approach, then I could remove my emotions from the investment equation. I wrote a book about it called The 7 Rules of Wall Street, and sell in May was one of them. And I found that actually by sticking with stocks but gravitating toward the defensive healthcare consumer staples sectors in May through October, you would have increased your performance from 7.5% for the S&P 500 from May through October over the past 25 years to 10.5%. And you would have done so with lower volatility. So you stick with stocks, you just rotate toward the defensive areas during that seasonally weak period.
Yeah, and it looks like you were talking about the small cap stocks while doing this. Do you want to just move into defensive large cap, or do you want to move into the small caps?
Well, that's up to the investor. What I do show is that I've done this analysis and found that this seasonality was evident not only with domestic stocks, but international stocks as well. And it was also evident with mid-cap and small-cap U.S., as well as developed international and emerging markets. So it's not just a large-cap phenomena. It basically does show that there is a period of weakness May through October, no matter where you go and what size. And I think a lot of it has to do with capital inflows. Most of the money comes in early in the year in the term of additions to pensions, 401ks, IRAs, et cetera. And in the May through October period, you have a lack of capital inflows, plus you have portfolio adjustments as the earnings season marches along.
I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things, though. Sam, you... one of the things that we talked about, in fact, you introduced the concept to me. I didn't know it until you brought it to my attention a couple of interviews ago. There is no alternative, and you gave authorship to that the last time you were on to someone else. And by the way,
Craig Johnson.
Yeah, and we've tracked that back to actually Maggie Thatcher, I think.
And even past that.
So, but you actually brought it to my attention that there is no alternative, and the market still seems to be working under that assumption out there. Does it concern you that that we have fewer and fewer shares, that in 1998 we had more public listed companies than we do now? Does the disappearance of all these companies, do all these share buybacks that we've been seeing corporate executives do, which I think kind of boosts their own personal bottom line, but regardless of the reason why they're doing it, they're buying back shares in the open market. Does that concern you that the supply is getting more limited, it seems, year by year?
Well, I wouldn't. I think it's an interesting statistic, but I wouldn't say it really concerns me because there still are thousands of companies out there with millions and millions of shares available. So I'm really more concerned about earnings being in positive territory, yet revenues being in negative territory, companies are certainly managing their earnings by buying back shares, engaging in cost cutting, etc. But there's really no top-line growth. And the reason, I think, primary reason is because there's no inflation out there. And so companies do not have the ability to raise prices. And at the same time, we have a lot of skepticism, not only about the U.S. economy, but also about the global economy. And so the one thing that I do not hear economists talk about, and that is the risk of recession. And so that's something that I am keeping an eye on, but have yet to pinpoint that we are likely to have one in the near future.
So you don't, so you don't think that right now you don't see anything that would bring a recession in the near future? What about deflation? That's a word that you don't hear it very often, but about once a quarter, somebody comes along and throws the D word out there that, you know, they're concerned about deflation. I think it was last quarter. France was in a deflationary environment. They were concerned about that might get imported over here. Any concern that you have about deflation?
As it does not pertain to my ego, yes, I have a concern about that. I do have people trying to deflate my ego every day, but that's a different matter. I think that's one reason why the Fed is not going to be that aggressive with the beginning of its rate tightening program, or after they do initiate it, that they're really not going to be tightening as rapidly and as dramatically as they have in the past, because the Fed has had lots of practice with fighting inflation, but really only had the 1930s with which to fight deflation and didn't do a very good job. So I would tend to say that they really don't want to get caught into that whirlpool, that downward swirl of prices that causes consumers to say, you know what, I'm going to hold off on my purchases and wait for even better prices, because if it happens to one person, it's going to happen to a majority, and it's very tough to get out of that downward spiral.
You know, Alice Rivlin was interviewed by Market Watch, and one of the comments that she made was that she says that that worrying about inflation is oh so last century thinking. That she said that really that's not exactly the problem that's out there anymore. She said her biggest concern is systemic risks in the system. Do you share any of that concern of hers? That she said that's really what she's concerned about. She's not concerned about that. She's also concerned about, I'll bring out both of the points. She's also concerned about the fact that the Fed is concerned. She's indicating that the Fed is concerned that when they raise rates, if they raise rates, okay, I only got 30 seconds, so I'll just throw this out, Sam, we can ask on the other side, that if and when the Fed raises rates, that people are going to extrapolate that those rates are going to continue to go higher, and she says that's a real concern to the Fed. I'd like to get your take on that when we come back on the other side of the break. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. Back in a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
If you just joined us, you've missed a great show, but we've got one more segment remaining. We've got Sam Stovall with us today. He's Managing Director, U.S. Equity Strategy of S&P Capital's IQ's Global Markets Intelligence Group. Sam serves as analyst, publisher, and communicator of the S&P's outlooks for the economy, market, and sectors. He's also chairman of the S&P Investment Policy Committee. He wrote a great book, by the way. If you haven't gotten a copy of it, you should, called The 7 Rules of Wall Street. And Sam, in fact, I didn't put this. How do people get a hold of data, information, things that you guys put out there at S&P?
Well, thank you for asking. If you go to www.getmarketscope.com. MarketScope is our electronic research delivery platform for stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, and by going to getmarketscope.com, you can sign up for a 14-day free trial.
Okay.
All right. Thank
great.
You, Sam.
All right. We were talking before the break about Alice Rivlin and some of the comments she made, and one of the things she's really concerned about is that people are Well, you know, she's not too sure, and I don't know how you feel about it. Do you think the Fed needs to raise interest rates? I mean, it doesn't seem like, you know, they're usually their mandate is controlling inflation. I kind of agree with Alice, and that certainly, certainly with oil down, inflation is not going to be a major issue. And she kind of thinks it's a waste of time to be focused on that. She's more concerned with systemic risk, which is a much bigger, longer discussion. But do you think that that the Fed needs to raise rates? Do you even think they're going to raise rates? There's some question of whether or not they're going to.
Well, I think they want to raise rates so that they can put some more arrows into their quivers, so they have something with which to use later on should the economy slow,
right,
should we fall into recession, and because the business cycle has not been repealed, so that will happen, but they want to just make sure that they then have the ability to do something in a stimulative fashion. And right now, with interest rates essentially at zero, that is off the table. But you're bringing up a good point, because should the Fed be raising short-term rates, that's going to make our short-term bond market even more attractive to international investors. Their money will be flowing here to the U.S. to buy into these higher yields, and that's going to put more upward pressure on the value of the U.S. dollar, which would have a negative impact on our economy, because it'll make our exports more expensive overseas. Maybe that will help foreign economies who are weaker than we are, because then the money will stay in the domestic markets, but the foreign economies will benefit at our expense.
Yeah, I don't see anything that's going to weaken the dollar right now, and obviously international stocks, those that deal overseas, they're beginning to really feel the pinch, as I discussed earlier. A large percentage of them now are not seeing top-line growth, which means their sales are going down. Do you see an end to this? How does this play out, Sam? How do you think this is going to end up?
Well, I think that we're seeing the unemployment rate go in the right direction. We are seeing that housing is staying elevated in terms of home sales as well as housing prices. So we keep thinking that we're going to see an improvement in the economic data. I would say, however, notwithstanding the first quarter's numbers, which will be released on Thursday, the 30th of April, which we're likely to see a 1% growth or less as compared with 2.2% for the last quarter. So because of the most recent snowstorms in February, we expect to see a pretty weak first quarter for U.S. gross domestic product.
What do you see for the year? You know, every year it seems like, certainly lately, we start out fourth quarter, everybody says the next year is going to be great. And then the last several years, the first quarters have been disappointing, but second and third quarters have come and kind of saved the day. Do you think we're going to have the same scenario this year?
Well, from an earnings perspective, it's really just the fourth quarter that's going to save the day. That's the only quarter that is going to look like the cavalry coming over the hill. We expect more than a 3% decline in earnings in the second quarter of this year. Third quarter is now expected to be negative, albeit very slightly. From a GDP perspective, we're looking at maybe 1% in the first quarter, and then, yes, a gradual improvement for the remainder of the year, with the full year being up, between 2.5% and 3%. The official target is 3%, but like we've seen in several other years, we will probably end up having a number that's a shade below that.
Right. So overall, is there anything that really concerns you? You and I were kind of talking during the break, and for those of you that don't know, Sam's father kind of preceded him in the guru status. I used to listen to his father many, many years ago, had the pleasure of meeting him on several occasions. And so Sam has the market analysis in his DNA. Is there anything when you and Bob get together that really concerns you about what's going on out there?
Yes, I like to say that a boxer is rarely felled by the punch he expects. So the things that we've been worrying about for the last couple of years have already been factored into equity prices. Some of the things, however, that we might be underestimating or not anticipating at all are likely to be the things that come around to bite us. something that does sort of worry me is the buildup of military tensions around the globe. Russia's willingness to invade the Crimea, to continue to put pressure on Ukraine. They're really just rebuilding that buffer zone between themselves and NATO, as seen in the Caucasus, Belarus, and I think that they're causing a lot of concerns for those people in Poland and in the Baltic states. Also, they don't really seem to care that the other foreign countries are putting sanctions upon them, and their economy is very close to falling into a severe recession. So, yes, that is something that I worry about. You know, could we have another Russian debt crisis and recession that could have reverberations around the globe?
Now, you know, sometimes when you have recessions, that's when you get military a military buildup, because they, you know, they've often said that, you know, that the various wars we've had in history are helped pull us out of economic doldrums. Do you think that would be Putin's response if he got into a recession, that he would do a military buildup and kind of pull his country out of it?
Well, the buildup, but hopefully he won't actually use that buildup. I think the concern right now is the negotiations going on with Iran and whether it goes far enough to satisfy the Israelis or whether they will eventually need to take matters into their own hands. Usually what we find with such market shocks is that it ends up causing the market to go down between 5% and 10%, but then represents a pretty good buying opportunity because investors realize that it's not going to be adversely affecting the global economies. So usually market shocks are good buying opportunities.
Okay, well, let me get you out there. I've got a minute to go. What do you think of the market this year? Up, down, sideways? You want to go out on the limb and give me an idea of what you think it's going to do?
Yeah, I think it's going to be up. I call myself a bull with a lowercase b. Our 12-month target, meaning this time next year, we should be up at 2250 on the S&P 500. So mid to high single-digit price appreciation, mainly because the yield on the S&P 500 is higher than the yield on the 10-year note. Whenever that's happened, the average gain has been 20%. Of course, there's no guarantee history will repeat.
Sam, thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing your knowledge. Appreciate it. Folks, thank you for being with us also. Hope you have a great day. God bless. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.